quiz show furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn. It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Kerry Kasem. Kerry brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Kerry Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world. That would be on KVC.com. If you don't get 790, I'm Alan Gervy. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, and no one else is, just me. Today, I'm here, as usual, on this beautiful Saturday afternoon to be the managing partner of your life, because we all need a managing partner in our life. And with me, of course, is Kerry Kasem. She manages my life while I'm here.
That's right.
No, it isn't.
That's right. I manage everything you do.
You've never
managed.
Every
word that comes out of your mouth.
You've never managed anything that I do. Nothing. The only person who does that, I think you know who it
Nancy.
Is.
Nancy.
That would be it. It's always the wife. It's a pleasure being here with you because I assume you're not going to manage my life today.
No, I couldn't.
I had an exciting morning, actually, because I was asked by the California State Bar through the California Lawyers Association to speak at a boot camp conference, and the panel that I provided for the California State Bar was on mass workplace violence. The fact that I've represented a number of the San Bernardino terrorist shooting victims, I guess, put me in the position to give this seminar, and it was a lot of fun talking about violence and killing and murders.
That was
and
fun.
Everything.
You're terrible.
Wasn't fun. But yeah, I did it from the workers' compensation perspective. All of these cases are workers' compensation claims. I have represented a number of injured workers who have been subject to mass workplace violence, and some just violence, people getting shot, a lot of tellers at banks and on jobs, fights. There's a lot of fights, believe it or not. People's anger gets the best of them and
I'm sure.
Get beat up. Cops that are dealing with violence all the time.
But not falling into pits with shovels.
That was a teacher who fell into the pit. And I'm not
going
to go.
We're not going there.
So many people listen to that show.
They loved it.
I had people over at my house that afternoon, and there were a lot of people who, on the way to my house, were listening to the show and saying how they couldn't believe some of those stories of people who get injured on the job and how awful it is, you know, and you're laughing. You were laughing listening to people's misfortune.
It was your mom mostly who's sitting there shaking her head, and I'm looking at her laughing. You're telling, like, horrible, tragic stories. Then we get on that laughter, and it has nothing to do with the story at all, and it was so bad. Yeah, I blame your mom entirely.
Yeah, I think
Evelyn.
It's her fault, of course. I think everyone missed the message of how traumatic and tragic injuries can be on the job. And, you know, I'll tell you something. There probably will be a lot more workers' compensation claims filed in the future because of a decision that came out from the California Supreme Court on April 30th. It's the Dynamex decision, and people have called it a game changer in the state of California. When you think about it, you think maybe it's a boring decision, like who really cares on who's classified as an independent contractor and who's classified as an employee, but it really has far-reaching implications for a lot of workers, especially gig workers.
Yeah, Uber.
You know what gig workers are.
Well, you get a gig. It's not necessarily like you're hired full-time. It's your gig. It's like a band. You know, you get to play at a place and you call it a gig. They're
right.
Not there full-time.
Right.
Yeah.
In the past, they used a test called the Borrello test, which allowed for a lot of independent contractors, so employers did not have to pay benefits, including workers' compensation benefits, if someone got injured on the job. But with the new Dynamex case, we have now the ABC test, and that makes it much harder for an employer to get away with hiring an independent contractor versus an employee with benefits. So it changes the landscape for a lot of workers in this state. You want to listen today to find out from the experts expert what it will mean to the state of California and maybe job that you do, a gig that you do.
I think we're going to lose a lot of businesses if this goes through for everybody. I think people are going to leave in groves. I've already had two people that own big businesses here in Los Angeles. One moved to Las Vegas, one moved to Florida. Said, I'm done with these taxes. I'm done with these laws. I can't keep my business open.
Yeah, and that may be true. So we're going to talk to Michael Rubin in a few minutes. He's at Altshuler Burzon, and he is an expert in this area. In fact, he was involved in the Dynamex case. He represented labor unions who argued on behalf of the Dynamex drivers. They were truck drivers. So he was on the winning side in this case, and he's going to talk a little bit about Dynamex and what it means to the state of California and the future of employment. He is a well-known authority, having won 6 California Lawyers of the Year Award, the Clay Award, for the California Lawyer Magazine and Daily Journal. You know, just a second ago, Carrie, you said the word religious. I'm not sure what context it was in.
Well, and it's a religious exodus. Usually you use that in the exodus, but it's just a leaving. Everyone's going to go.
Well, you know, it just made me think about a decision that came out of the Supreme Court this week, because I like to play off of words, and I really wasn't thinking about it as a religious exodus, but finally, the cake shop case, Masterpiece Cake Shop case, came down from the Supreme Court, and for a lot of people, it was really a disappointment, because the Supreme Court did not make a ruling that is believed to be far-reaching. It's funny, because there was big debates on my Facebook page and on others, I'm sure, when they announced through the media that it was a narrow decision, 7-2. And people thought, how is that narrow, 7-2, with the justice? But what they meant by narrow was that it was limited. I'm not sure why they said narrow. That got into the media. But it was a limited decision, and it was based mainly on what the Colorado Commission, the Civil Rights Commission, said and did during the litigation of this case with Jack Phillips. Of course, we had Kristen Wagner on our show. That was with... we had the judge on to it. I think Kristen was a little upset with us.
Well, was the judge the one from Texas?
Transgender judge.
Yes. I don't think she was upset. I actually agreed with a lot she had to say.
She actually emailed me afterwards and said she was upset.
Okay.
But she did a phenomenal job of arguing the case at the Supreme Court. She won. She represented Jack Phillips on behalf of the Alliance Defending Freedom, and they were successful. Jack Phillips was permitted to turn down the business of expressing himself, if you will, by making a cake for a gay couple, which he refused to do because it was against his religious beliefs. Now, a lot of people think that that's what the decision means, but certainly if you read the decision, Justice Kennedy wrote it. They really didn't talk a whole lot about First Amendment rights. They didn't talk a whole lot about the freedom of religion, but they really focused in on what the commission did when they were litigating it, saying that one of its members was very rude and his remarks were hostile about freedom of religion. And based on that, they said that Jack Phillips had a right to turn down these people, the gay couple.
Okay, so they were saying like the gay couple was very hostile towards religion.
No.
Okay, explain that to me, because you lost me.
The Colorado Civil Rights Commission, who heard the case on discrimination, was very hostile to Jack Phillips about his religious beliefs. So they focused in on that, and they limited it to the facts of this case rather than providing a far-reaching decision on the freedom of expression, freedom of religion, saying that people can go and refuse business because you're beautiful, or because you're you have Lebanese blood in you, or because I don't believe that having a famous father is something that I want to do business with, you know. I mean, I'm being a little bit...
I hear what you're saying.
None of that. This decision has nothing to do with that, but it was focused simply on the facts of this case and what happened at the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. A lot of people think that's a cop-out. Justice Ginsburg, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who we had the RBG director...
Great movie.
Yeah, the movie. We had them on the show a few weeks weeks ago on RBG. If you haven't seen RBG, it's really worth seeing the film. You know, she dissented. She provided her dissent, saying that it was really discrimination and a gay couple should be entitled to have a cake made for them regardless.
I just don't understand when in California you can walk into a shop that says, we refuse the right to serve anyone. Anybody. Well, how can you get away with that sign if it's not true?
Well, apparently it is if you have religious beliefs, because you have to look at whether the First Amendment is trumping these type of situations. And it's ironic, you know, with the ACLU, they get put in a very strange position when they have to defend the baker saying that he has that freedom because they're typically known for defending First Amendment rights and the right to religion, because the shoe could be on the other foot. But the irony is that they're always defending, you know, gay and lesbian causes. But in this case, because it was based on First Amendment, you know, that's, again, why some of the more liberal justices, two of them in particular, Kagan and Breyer, were saying that they went with the majority because of that reason and because of the specifics of this case, when we would have expected them to go with the two dissenters, Sotomayor and Ginsburg. So I'm not sure we accomplished much with this cake shop case, but we did have Kristen Wagner on the show, and she provided a very worthwhile and entertaining show. We'll see what happens in the future. I don't know that it's going to stand for precedent. We need to get to the Dynamex case, because that is a precedent from the Supreme Court of the state of California. We need to learn about how it's going to affect employment, labor, and the workforce in the state of California. After the break, we will have Michael Rubin and talk Dynamex. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
When your drains are clogged, your sink's backed up, your toilet's on the fritz, and when you need a plumber now, just simply call Ritz. We're master plumbers, we're really nice, we're big on service, not on price.
Call Ritz Plumbing at 888-757-RITZ. They're no rooter guys here, only full-service professional plumbers. You got a kitchen or bath problem? Need an earthquake valve installed? How about a tankless water heater? Well, Ritz Plumbing specializes in trenchless sewer repair, drain cleaning and maintenance, and yes, even rooter service, plus 18-month interest-free financing is possible. So call Ritz Plumbing, 888-757-RITZ. Ritz Plumbing, they're the real thing, only full-service professional plumbers, and here comes the clean pipe chorus. Hit it, guys.
So when you need some plumbing in California, yay, simply call Ritz. Don't flush your money away.
Ritz Plumbing, 888-757-RITZ.
This Father's Day, show Dad what he's been missing from Ryobi and the Home Depot. Get him a Ryobi OnePlus 18-volt trimmer blower combo kit for just $149. That'll put 18 volts of portable power right in his hands and his yard, with no cord to hold him back and nothing to slow him down. He won't miss a thing. The Ryobi OnePlus trimmer blower combo kit, just $149. Only at the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only. See store for details. Valid through June 20th.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, lifting Murphy's Law to the highest level on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Some noisy music.
Not too noisy.
No.
Not too bad.
I have to talk really loud to get over it. Do you know what? I just came in here because I was just negotiating with KBC here. I'm getting my employment contract together.
Oh,
because
good, good.
I had been a gig worker, but since this Dynamax decision, I am now negotiating my employment contract.
Do I get one too?
You do, yes. We are going to have workers' compensation benefits, so if I fall off my chair and hurt myself, I'm going to get the benefits from KBC. Before the break, we were talking about not only the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, a lot of people have called in about my comments about that, but we also mentioned that we're going to talk about the Dynamax case, and that was a decision that came out of the California Supreme Court on April 30th. People have called it a game changer. It involved a delivery company and a lawsuit for employment benefits. In the olden days, we used to deal with a case called Borrello, which provided some guidance for independent contractors and gig workers so that we knew whether or not they were independent contractors or whether they were misclassified. And I'll tell you, there were a lot of companies who misclassified workers for their own benefit, of course. But now we have the Dynamax case and we have the ABC test, which makes it much more difficult for an employer to categorize a worker as an independent contractor. And it has a lot of repercussions and implications for employment benefits and the bottom line on companies as well. So there's arguments on both sides, and we are privileged today on Gervie's Law to have Michael Rubin, who's with Altshuler Burzon. He is an expert in employment law and labor law. He has won an unprecedented 6 California Lawyer of the Year awards. That's the Clay Award from the California Lawyer Magazine and Daily Journal. 3 of them are in employment law and 1 in worker health and safety. So he knows what he's talking about. He's been named the top 100 lawyers in California a couple times and one of the top 75 labor and employment lawyers in the state. He also represented labor unions in the Dynamax case who argued on behalf of the Dynamax driver. Michael Rubin, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, I mentioned when I was introducing the topic and you that the Dynamax case is been said to be a game changer. As an expert in this arena, before we get into the substance of it, is it really a game changer?
Absolutely. It makes a huge difference in California workplaces in determining who's an employee and who's an independent contractor. It clarifies the rules. It eliminates uncertainty. Certainly, it will result in many more workers being properly classified as employees rather than independent contractors. But we had such confusion before. You were talking about the Borrello test. No one really knew how to apply it. No one could predict the results. We now have predictability, and in the long run, that'll help.
Now, you represented labor unions. Was it through amicus filings, or how did you go about representing the labor unions on behalf of the Dynamax drivers?
Yes, I represented the Service Employees International Union, the Teamsters, the UFCW, and then eventually I ended up representing all of the amici, a series of civil rights groups and employment rights groups, and co-argued this case along with plaintiff's counsel in the California Supreme Court.
So tell us what your main position was on behalf of those mostly union members and why you were successful in making those arguments.
Well, unions are interested in protecting the rights of all workers, not just union workers.
Right.
So the unions joined this case because there was great confusion in California and around the country in determining who is an employee and who is an independent contractor. As you pointed out, employers do misclassify because they can have enormous economic savings. The California DLSE, the Department of Labor Standards Enforcement, has estimated that $7 billion in payroll taxes remains unpaid because of misclassification. Independent contractors don't have protections of minimum wage and overtime. They're not protected against sexual harassment. They're not protected against discrimination.
Workers' compensation, you got to get that in there.
Workers' compensation, there's a whole slew of protections that are only available to employees and not to independent contractors. And employers save a great deal of money by misclassifying. An independent contractor has to pay his or her own share of FICA and the employer's share as well of FICA and FUTA taxes. So it's huge economically, but the unions were interested in making sure that the core right to protections under the California Labor Code are protected. This is a state law case. It involves rights under California law only. Those rights were being violated throughout the state in many industries, and the unions, along with the plaintiffs' counsel, wanted to put a stop to that.
And when you argued at the Supreme Court, what were the compelling questions that the justices were asking you or some of the other attorneys presenting the position?
The Supreme Court, in this case, as in many recent cases, took a very practical orientation. They wanted to know what was the best test, what was the way to instruct courts and to instruct juries as to how to really distinguish between employees and independent contractors. They asked, how do you decide what function someone performs and when are the purposes of the labor laws best satisfied? So they asked questions about this type of industry, that type of industry, what the drivers in this case did, why they should be classified as employees rather than independent contractors. And they were looking for a test and ultimately adopted or borrowed a test that had been used in Massachusetts, New Jersey, Vermont, and elsewhere that they thought would fit within the California economy and fit within the language of the California wage statutes and be easy to apply so we would have some certainty, some predictability, so people would know whether they were properly classified or not.
A question for you. This is Carrie here. Hi. I'm just wondering about, like, the Uber model. And with Uber, with Lyft, Via, all the different types of, ride-sharing companies out there. Do you think if you put this model on under them and let's say they all became now employees, wouldn't that just bring down all these companies and these people wouldn't have jobs anymore? What would happen there?
If an employer is cheating and is misclassifying someone as an independent contractor when the law requires that they be treated as employees, they should be held accountable. One of the concerns that the court expressed repeatedly was the unfair competitive advantage that companies that violate the laws of workers are able to obtain. The problem is that if you're abiding by the law, if you're properly classifying your workers as employees, but your competitor is treating them as independent contractors, your competitor saves a ton of money in labor costs, right, making it harder for you to compete. So there's a race to the bottom. The Supreme Court essentially leveled the playing field. What will happen in the case of the Ubers and Lyfts and other demand economy companies? Yeah. Well, they're probably going to have to classify their drivers as employees. We haven't talked about how the test works, but one of the central elements of the test, I think, is very clear, that someone who drives for a company that provides rides through its drivers is someone who has to be treated as an employee of that company. It fits right squarely within the wheelhouse of this particular test.
And do you think that Uber or Lyft would have enough money to do that without closing up shop and then leaving everybody without jobs? And I'm wondering,
yes.
You think that they would stay afloat?
Yes. Their rates may change. Yeah. They may have to be more competitive with taxi companies. One of the problems now is that companies like Uber and Lyft are ripping away business from other more conventional ride-sharing services like taxis, like Super Shuttle, like the other vans, because their rates are so low. If they have to start treating their drivers as employees and pay for overtime and reimburse them for business-related expenses.
And workers' compensation.
And don't forget workers' compensation.
absolutely. So spoken by a true applicant attorney.
So I'm just wanting to understand this, because to me it seems like it would just, they close up shop and say, forget it, but maybe not.
Well, so where would we be? Would be exactly where we were 8 or 9 years ago before they came onto the scene, and if someone wanted a ride, they would call their local taxi service, or their downtown, put their hand out and call down the taxi.
Sure. I know, I hear this. I'm just saying my friends who have supported themselves with, they have jobs, but they needed extra money, and they're driving Uber or Lyft, they would be in big trouble. That's all I'm saying. I'm worried for my friends who actually do use those companies.
Well, the unemployment rate in California right now is fairly low, and recent studies about the net pay taken home by Uber and Lyft drivers show that for the most part, they earn less than minimum wage. When you deduct the cost of the cars, car maintenance, insurance, gas, oil, and all the rest, they net out very little money. So it's true that if the companies decide to go out of business and not raise their rates, which I assume they would, there would be an adverse impact on the drivers who work for them. Those drivers would look for other jobs in this economy where there are plenty of jobs in which they will actually net out more money.
Michael, now this decision is seen...
And then get workers' compensation.
Exactly, thank you. But it's seen as a liberal decision, so to speak, whatever that means.
Right.
And you representing, and you know, you're on my team because I represent individuals. You're representing workers, as do I. I wholly support what you've done and the arguments you've made. However, there are a lot of people who are going to be impacted by this who don't have the extra income or the money to pay more for ride sharing, for instance, or for haircuts or for construction or whatever it is, if they're doing something at their home, you know, which may be a different category. But the point being is that this impacts the consumer who has taken advantage of some of the lower rates because these people are considered independent contractors, not employees.
That's right. I wouldn't worry as much about the people who are working at someone's home. I don't think there's going to be much of an impact of the decision there. But it's true that companies could choose, rather than to reduce their profits, to pass on the increased costs to consumers. Now, that's true of every minimum workplace standard. When the minimum wage goes up, same thing happens. The employers have the choice. You can either reduce your profits or pass it along. Payment of overtime at time and a half or long enough at double time, same thing. You can choose to reduce your profits or pass it along. The thought is that and this is just the construction of the law rather than the court making policy. So ultimately, it's a legislative judgment rather than a judicial judgment. But more people are likely to be benefited as a result of this decision, which would result in more money going to the economy. And those individuals being able to afford to pay more, their consumers themselves. So in the long run, it shouldn't have a negative effect at all. It should help everybody.
Interesting thoughts. Now, after the break, we have to take a quick break. But I want to ask you about Jeffrey Pfeffer, who's Stanford Business School professors, his comment saying that the gig economy was unsustainable regardless of this decision. I think that may be going off of what you're saying now, a little bit anyway, talking about the costs of having gig workers to the economy. Now, we'll talk about that as well as the future of the workforce in California as a result of the Dunmex decision after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on 790 KVC.
Radio 790, KABC News Update, I'm Steve Cumming. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau says all countries attending the Group of Seven summit have signed a joint communique despite sharp trade tensions with the U.S. Trudeau says the U.S., Canada, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, and Japan figured out, quote, consensus language they could all agree to. President Trump recently slapped tariffs on Canada, Mexico, and the European Union, angering his counterparts before he arrived at the summit. A former diplomat at the Vatican Embassy in Washington has been indicted by a Vatican court on allegations he possessed child pornography. The Vatican made the announcement today. Monsignor Carlo Alberto Capella allegedly, quote, possessed and exchanged a large quantity of child pornography. That according to a Vatican statement. Capella is set to face a trial at the Vatican starting June 22nd. KABC SoCal weather, clear skies tonight with lows around 60. More news coming up and continuous coverage on KABC.com. I'm Steve Cumming, Talk Radio 790, KABC News.
The Army National Guard is committed to keeping the country safe and our community secure. Composed of hundreds of thousands of citizen soldiers from all walks of life, the Guard is always ready to respond to local or national emergencies. We protect the homeland. We're always there when called upon, and in every state and territory, we stand guard for our communities. To learn more, log on to NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the California Army National Guard. Aired by the California Broadcasters Association and this station.
It's 3 p.m. and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples has a huge selection of ink and toner in stock and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Have you been lied to? Lied to by Washington politicians and the Wall Street propaganda machine? Hi, I'm Inc. Magazine best-selling author Brett Kitchen. And if you're over 55 with an IRA or 401k, I want to give you a free copy of my new book, Wealth Beyond Wall Street, because according to Time Magazine, Wall Street's 401ks have failed millions of Americans. After losing 35% in my IRA and the crash years ago, I said enough. And since then, I discovered a way to grow money potential double digits, reduce taxes dramatically, and also have my money protected when the next stock market crash hits. When the next market crash hits, you lose nothing. Call Wealth Beyond Wall Street now to get your free book and talk to a specialist to discover this little-known strategy to get potential double-digit growth during good years and never lose in the market crashes. Call 1-800-342-4040 to discover this asset that people like Walt Disney and JCPenney use to grow wealthy. Plus, when you call right now, you get free shipping and handling, no credit card required. And I'll send you a free copy of the audiobook so you can listen in your car. Call 1-800-342-4040. That's 1-800-342-4040. 1-800-342-4040.
Welcome back to Gerby's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Wow, I'm an intimidating guy. Wayman just really lowered the music from the last break.
He did.
Now
he slowed it down.
So chill. He's just like so intimidated by me when I said it was noisy, but I like noisy. But I'll tell you, maybe I'm getting old because, you know, I'm talking about noisy music and we're talking about gig economy and the different workforce that California is now experiencing over the last several years versus when I was in school and, you know, we either became a lawyer or a music producer or a doctor or an accountant. Now people have their own gigs. And I just wonder what this Dynamex decision will do to the mentality of the people who are younger, like your ex-boyfriend who was in the...
Oh, my God. Thank you, Alan.
Yeah, he was in his 20s.
Yes, he still is.
We're talking to Michael Rubin of Altshuler Burzon, who played an integral role in representing workers in the Dynamex case, the case that defined employee and independent contractor. And before the break, Michael, I said that Jeffrey Pfeffer had said that the gig economy wasn't sustainable in the first place. Do you agree with that, or do you think that now this Dynamex decision came out, the young folks that I'm referring to are going to have to get in line and become employees and work like all of us do?
Well, the fact that someone's an employee doesn't mean they're going to be putting on a suit and tie or a dress and go to an office and work from 9 to 5 and do a conventional job. Employee status simply means that you're entitled to the protections of the labor code and other provisions of California law. So there will be a far greater number of workers in the gig or on-demand economy who are treated as employees. Taxes will be paid as if they are employees, but I don't see that it will discourage people from performing those job functions. People will still want flexibility. There'll still be jobs where you can work outside an office, where you can dress the way you please, where you can wear your Allbirds. I don't see it as affecting the fundamental economic reasons why we have more flexible work time. There's obviously a problem in that a lot of companies reduce hours and make workers be part-time and put them on schedules that can change from day to day with no predictability. That obviously has a huge impact, particularly on low-wage workers,
right,
on workers who have transportation problems, workers who have to take care of children or parents. That's a problem. The other problem is what we call the fissured economy, the fact that many times companies will hire contractors who hire workers. It's an issue that's related to what happened in Dynamex. And the question is, which company is responsible for complying with labor laws? Is it only the subcontractor, or is it the company at the top of the pyramid? These are problems that we face and will continue to face in California and around the country. The decision doesn't really affect that. There are still economic reasons why companies will try to have flexible workplaces and why employees will want that flexibility, but the basic protections have to be guaranteed. And that was the problem. The problem is that too many people are being ripped off.
Yeah,
and,
you know,
and the cities and states are being ripped off as well because they lose the tax revenues that they're entitled to if someone's properly classified as an employee.
Right. You know, it's interesting you bring up contractors and subcontractors, and I've had a number of cases, really tragic cases, where we've actually been successful where there's been misclassification of construction workers workers, subcontractors who hire people under the guise of independent contractor work, and you know, hire unlicensed contractors, employers thinking that they can get away without paying workers' compensation benefits. I had one guy who fell off a scaffolding and was in a wheelchair, quadriplegic, and we were successful in showing that the employer really wasn't being honest when he hired an unlicensed contractor who hired some other people just trying to skirt the issue of paying taxes and paying workers' compensation benefits. So
that's right. And I've had lots of cases like that, too, in cases involving warehouses that are owned by one company, operated by another, and they use a temp agency to hire the warehouse workers, and we're able to hold all of them liable. The legislature has done a pretty good job in California in enacting new laws to address those situations, to extend liability when you have an unlicensed contractor, to shift burdens of proof and presumptions in certain industries where the violations are most prevalent. But it's hard to keep up with the violations because the employers, the shady employers,
right,
the ones the Supreme Court was talking about in Dynamics as being the ones who are forcing the race to the bottom by cheating, it's those that we have to rein in. The labor commissioner is doing a terrific job with the staff that she has in trying to rein them in, but there are a lot of them out there.
You know, I'm getting a lot of emails right now, and people are asking, so what does define the employee now? The court talked about businesses having to show that they don't control or direct the work, or that the duties fall outside what the company normally does or is customarily engaged in. What about how many hours someone works? How is this going to work moving forward based on this case?
It's a pretty straightforward test, and we have lots of experience in other states that have used this test to show how it should be implemented. The presumption is if you're performing work for someone else, you're an employee. The employer can only overcome that presumption and establish you're an independent contractor if it proves three separate and independent facts. One, that the worker is entirely free from that employer's control and direction in performing the work, both under the contract and real life. Two, the employer has to prove that the work that's being performed is outside the course of that company's business. If you're performing a core function, as in Dynamics, if you're driving for a company, if you're driving a delivery truck for a company that delivers, then you're performing a core function and you're an employee. And then third, the court looks to see, what about the worker? Does the worker have his or her own business? If you don't have your own business, then you're not an independent contractor. So unless the employer proves all three of those factors, the presumption applies and the worker is treated as an employee. That's actually the first test may be more difficult, control, the extent of control, that could be case specific. But the second and third factors, whether the work's outside the course of the employer's business and whether it is an independent business that the worker operates himself or herself, those are pretty straightforward and those will be the basis on which most of these cases will be decided.
And I had a store, I sold it a couple of years ago. Now, they came to me when I had like 1099 workers. They only worked a few hours a week. So it will depend on the hours as well, part-time, full-time. Does that have anything to do with it?
No, it's really the nature of the work and the nature of the business. If someone has their own business and they're spending a few hours working for you, let's say they do plumbing and you bring them in because you've got a burst pipe or a lot of burst pipes and they come in a couple hours a week or perform electrical work, well, they can be independent contractors. They've got their own business.
Sure.
You are not in the business of plumbing and electrical. But if you're hiring someone to do one of your core business functions, it doesn't matter how many or how few hours you hire someone for. They're your employee.
Here's the problem.
If you control them and direct them, they're your employee.
Got it. Here's the problem. I was running the store. It was a startup, you know, and I was doing everything I could, and I would have people come in a few hours a week so I could get away and do, you know, my radio shows. If I had to pay for insurance, if I had to pay for everything for them, work, I'd be done.
Michael's going to say you should be done then.
But now they're losing out on money. I've lost my store. Now there's another California business down the...
Of course. Right? You know, we have to close. Michael, I'm going to give you a chance here, Michael. Michael, hold on. I'm going to give you a chance, but we have to close out the segment. But let's leave it at that. Why don't you tell us exactly what Carrie is saying? What's going to happen for people like Carrie who had a small business? You know, we're not talking about the Ubers and Lyfts of the world or Grubhub. But what about these people? Are they going to continue to try and beat the system? Are we going to have an increase in employment litigation for people like you and me?
Just the opposite. In the short run, yes, as people are wrestling with how to apply this case and how it applies to them and back liability. Going forward, there will be far less litigation because we now have a simple formula that can be applied. It's clear which side of the line everyone is on. What's going to happen to someone? I come from a small business background. My dad and grandfather had a hardware store in Boston. The reality is that if you bring someone in, they paid people like employees. They were employees. If you bring someone in to work in your business, you've got to have enough money to pay them like employees. And that's all the Supreme Court said.
Wow. You know, Carrie's shaking her head.
I think they're going to lose a lot of businesses.
Well, you know, we'll see.
A lot of people are
applauding this decision. For people like Michael and I who are in the trenches and seeing workers getting screwed all the time, I think we understand the decision. And obviously the Supreme Court felt the same way. But there will be a lot of ramifications and implications of this decision. Michael Rubin from Altshuler-Berzon, thank you so much for being with us today. Very insightful comments, and hopefully we can have you back to talk about how this law progresses as we move forward.
Great. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
All right. Take care and have a good day. We got to take a quick break. We're going to be back, and we're going to talk census. After the break, we're bringing on Margot Anderson, who is the expert. Did you know there's an expert on the census that's taking place?
I would think. There's usually experts on most everything.
But she is the census. Yeah, before the show, she said consensus.
Like the consensus.
I had to correct you, Carrie. It's not consensus.
You're calling it consensus.
It's taking place in 2020, and there is a very controversial question. It could be on the census. We're going to talk about that after the break. You're listening to Kirby's Law right here on 790 KABC.
The workplace is a soap opera of relationships, rules, and labor violations. Hear about it Sunday evenings from 7 to 9 on Carl Gerber, Workplace Lawyer, right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Are you looking for an alternative to drug and alcohol rehabilitation that allows you to recover in the privacy of your own home with an individualized program? The Key Light Company's Concierge Detox LA can be that alternative. Headed by Dr. Damon Raskin, addiction specialist, and clinical psychologist Dr. Howard Glass, Concierge Detox LA can meet your recovery needs. For more information, contact Concierge Detox LA at 323-935-9712. That's 323-935-9712.
How would you like to legally turn your garage into a great apartment that you can rent out for money each month, turning dust into dollars? Curious? Call 833-WE-WANT-IT. Tune into Living the Dream with Sandy Dugley every Saturday at 7 p.m. on KABC.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-501-3689 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-501-3689 for your free author submission kit. Again, 800-501-3689.
The Home Depot has a surefire gift for Father's Day. New high-performance grills from Weber, America's top brand. Like the Weber Spirit 2 gas grill in stainless steel. Only at the Home Depot. Starting at just $449. It ignites every time, it maximizes flavor, and with a 10-year warranty, you'll be Dad's favorite for years to come. The Weber Spirit 2 gas grill starting at only $449 from America's number one Weber retailer. The Home Depot. More safe, more do it.
Welcome back to Gerby's Law. Still thinking about what can go wrong? Instead, let's get excited about what can go right on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Wow, we had such an opportunity to play some music about numbers, counting, which my kids love to do.
There's some good songs about that.
Well, I don't know what happened. We had to listen to...
4, 3, 2, 1, Earth. have to be? Come on, sing it
with
me. That's
fair. You know, I don't have time to sing it. I'm sorry. But it should be counting up. But, you know, interestingly, if people don't participate in the 2020 census coming up, then it could be 4321 instead of 1234. We want to welcome to Gurry's Law right now Margo Anderson. Now, Carrie, it isn't often that we get the authority on a subject because we have so many subjects that we cover, and we have people who claim to be an authority or pretend to be an authority or who are an authority, but we have the authority, not one of them, the authority on the census. Sensei. I don't know what it is. Margo Anderson is a history professor at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. She teaches American social history, women's history, and other subjects. She wrote the book, The American Census, A Social History, and she is the authority. Margo, welcome to Gurry's Law.
Thank you very much.
I guess you get that introduction all the time. And I want to ask you, because people wonder about census. First of all, is it census or censuses or what is
it? Censuses, yes.
Censuses. Yes. Yeah, thank you. Right. I had to ask the authority to answer that. Why is there a census in the first place? I know it dates back to 1790, and there's been all kinds of different approaches to it with the different administrations. But why do we have a census?
Okay. And the census is actually one of the innovations from the American Revolutionary War era. After the 13 colonies successfully rebelled and gained independence from Britain, they had to form a government. And the problem that they faced was that they were 13 now states, a very different size and economic life and religious life and so forth. And the first effort at that was to create something called the Articles of Confederation, which gave each state one vote. But it turned out that Little Rhode Island, which was a 20th the size of Virginia at that point, and the government proved unworkable. So in 1787, there was a constitutional convention, and a bunch of men sat in Philadelphia for the summer and worked out the governmental structure, you know, the bicameral legislature, the presidency, the judiciary that we know we've lived with ever since.
Right.
And one of those innovations was a decennial, every 10 years, to count the population and to shift representation in the House of Representatives and in the Electoral College on the basis of the numbers that were counted.
And it has
that's where it comes from.
And it's become an important, I would say, political issue, especially now, because it wasn't since, 1950, the last time the census asked a question about citizenship status. And now the DOJ is asking the Census Bureau, ask them to include citizenship on the questions for the 2020 census. Why is that?
Okay, first of all, there have been lots of political controversies over the years, and they change with whatever the social issues are of the day. The measurement of unemployment was an incredibly controversial issue in the 1920s and 1930s, for example, because of the Great Depression. Right now, as you say, because we're debating immigration, we're talking about citizenship and immigration again. Technically, we have been asking a question on citizenship since 1950, particularly since 1970. It's just that we've been asking it for a sample of the population census, not the full census. And the proposal from the Commerce Department is to put it back on the very short form census, which is what they call the 100% count. And so that's the issue. We do have the citizenship data. You could look it up by going to the Census Bureau website right now and see, and get it broken down pretty detailed. But the issue is whether to ask everybody that question, and that's And we have not done that since 1950.
Do you ever take censuses where, and this is going to sound weird, but where you pass it around saying who doesn't take the census? Just say yes or no. So you kind of have a feeling of who really doesn't. I know it sounds weird, but there's so many people who don't do it. I didn't do the census when it came around this last time. How do you know, and how do you make up for that?
The question is whether you are a household head. In other words, the way we do the census is that we send a form, and it's traditionally either been by a human being knocking on your door,
right,
or a something that comes in the U.S. mail to each residential address in the United States, and then one person at each address is designated to sort of fill that out. So if you're in, if you're a kid, or if you're a roommate, or if you're, for example, living in a college dormitory, somebody else will fill out that census for you.
You know, we only have a few minutes, and this is really the key here. And you've provided such a professorial perspective on this. Now I need to put you on the spot, because people want to know, with this question about citizenship status, how will it impact it? First of all, the short answer, will it definitely be on the 2020 census, or will the government still consider taking it out?
I think there are various organizations and
lobby groups
have sued the Census Bureau.
Right.
And those, and by the way, that's not also unique. I mean, the Census Bureau gets sued all the time.
Yeah, and the lawsuit in California is actually a pretty big deal, because the state has put a lot of support behind the lawsuit.
Right. So So sometime in the next year, those suits will go into the federal courts, and there will be a decision made about whether to keep it on, you know, whether to affirm Secretary Ross's decision or not. We don't know that yet. In 1999, the Supreme Court didn't rule on the format of the 2000 census until January of 1999. So my senses were about a 6 months or a year away.
Your census on the census is. On the census. So, so what's going to happen if it is included? Is it true that we will not get people participating for fear of the repercussions of indicating immigration citizenship status, and that will lean in favor of Republicans?
Okay, I think those are separate questions. Will people have trouble with the census with this question? And I think the answer is yes, and that's why there's been so much fuss and bother about it already. There will be a debate about it. There will be, usually the year before the census, is a big public relations campaign that has to start in the year 9, and so that'll happen next year no matter what happens. And then the question will be whether people will not fill out the form, fill it out, and give and not fill out that question. I don't think we know yet. And one of the concerns of people like me and, you know, the academics who use data all the time is that the way you actually get an answer to that question is you test it. You know, you do pretests and so forth. And we haven't done that this round. And so that's why there's much consternation,
right,
which is that Trump administration could have asked to put this up last year, and we would have then had a year of tests to basically be able to answer your question.
So, Marco, using Solomonic wisdom, and I know that we're not going to hold you to it, what is going to happen, and how will this affect our country?
Well, let's put it this way. We all have to agree on the census results when they come out in the same way that we agree on the results of an election. Right? We have to, the losers have to concede to the winners. And so if there is a challenge, or people feel that it, quote, isn't fair in some form, we will have a big public debate and probably more lawsuits about that issue. And that's And I think that's what the public debate is about now, which is, do we need to do this? Can we get the data? I mean, the secretary's argument is that he needs the data for voting rights enforcement. We've been enforcing the Voting Rights Act for 50 years without this data. Why now?
Right.
That's the question.
No, and I appreciate that answer because, I think you kind of showed your thoughts on it. And again, we're not holding you to it, but the voting rights, like you said, this country has been able to enforce the Voting Rights Act without it, so why now? Really becomes the question. We appreciate Margo Anderson coming on Gervie's Law and talking about the census. As we get closer, we'll probably check in with you to see where we're at, but I think it's going to make lawyers a lot of money as we move forward with the litigation. Thanks for being with us today.
That's right. Right. I think that's right.
All right. Well, have a good day. We're going to have to close out Gervie's Law on that note. We want everyone to tune in every Saturday at 2 p.m. to hear Gervie's Law. Carrie and I wish you all a great week.
This show furnished by Rowan, Gerby & Wynn.